thank you for coming. My name's Tris West. It's not working at all. Okay. I think the intention of this is not necessarily to project, but to record the presentations. So you'll still need to speak loudly. Okay, that's my guess. A few things before we start. We don't have a laser pointer. There's a couple people with laser pointers if you want to use them, but I've been instructed that they prefer us not to use a laser pointer, and they would prefer us to use the mouse here at the podium. That's because of however they are recording the talks. Okay. Let's see. The second thing that I noticed, since this is the first day and in the morning, you've seen a number of the bathrooms, and there's only one door you go in for male and female. But what I've noticed is that on different floors, the male and female are on different sides. So don't go in one and assume that's the same case for the next floor, because I've already made that mistake yesterday. Okay. This is a symposium on estimating current and future biomass feedstocks. And the reason for the symposium is because many research groups across the nation right now are working at this issue right now. And estimating current and future biomass feedstocks really underpins almost all of the analyses that we're trying to do right now, whether it's analyses of land use change, greenhouse gas emissions, soil erosion, the amount of residue that can be removed. There's one thing that can be used in all of those analyses, and that's the available residue that currently exists and that which we can potentially access in the future. And there's a number of ways to estimate this. My goal in this symposium is for us to discuss those different methods, learn from each other, and facilitate the improvement of these estimates over the next year or two. To introduce the topic, I've laid out some very simple steps. And of course, we can discuss how complete these steps are. But what I see is that there are some very obvious components of estimating feedstocks regionally that we need to know and that we can improve. The first one, starting down here, is current land area. What is the current land area? It seems obvious. We can use inventory data, remote sensing data. Which remote sensing data are you going to use? There's a big question out there as to how much land is truly available for the establishment of biomass feedstocks. The next box up is, once you have the land area, what's the subset of that land area that's actually available to grow feedstocks? That gets into different land use types and marginal lands, which we have one of the talks on today. We'll address that. Move over here. Current yields, net primary production, biomass, and of that, what can be sustainably removed. While this happens to be the smallest circle down here, field data, it's obvious to you that that's actually one of the most important components of this diagram. Without the field data, without the agronomic field experiments, we have nothing to extrapolate. We'll still get an answer. We'll model it somehow, and there'll be policy, but it may not be accurate. All of these components end up helping us estimate current feedstocks. And then what many of the research groups around the nation are doing right now is having some type of economic component which allows us to estimate the adoption of those feedstocks, the potential land use change, the cost associated with growing these feedstocks in the future, so that we get that estimate of current feedstocks and future availability of feedstocks in the future. The symposium is organized like this. Three talks on a more general, integrative level of methods used to estimate current and future feedstocks. To give us some idea of the thread that ties through all of these components before we get into the details, which are then, after a break, three talks on herbaceous feedstock, field work and modeling, moving into woody feedstock, field work and modeling, and then two final talks, again trying to wrap those up basically in this final component here, using economic modeling to look at future feedstock yields and the implications of those on different environmental variables, legislation, land use change, etc. If there's no questions on those introductory slides, I'll go on to the first presentation. The first presentation is meant to be fairly general, and it just shows some of those components that we tried to address at Oak Ridge National Lab over the last year. One of the first boxes that I showed was crop identification. Right now we're using the USDA cropland data layer to identify current crops, the land extent, where the crops are grown. Throughout the presentation, I've zoomed in on the state of Missouri because when you're working with the cropland data layer, which is 56 by 56 meter resolution, seeing a larger map of the United States doesn't really help you see anything. So I'm zooming into this more diverse cropping area, corn, soybean, pasture in Missouri throughout the presentation. Here, I'm showing a movement from, or an estimate of biomass, which is a link. This method is using the NAS inventory data and integrating that in with the land use, essentially superimposing yields onto the land area to get an idea of total biomass. And the factors that we're using for this are listed under this crop carbon link here, which is a simple table that's been actually published by a number of researchers looking at harvest index, root shoot ratios, etc. But it allows us to end up with a map something like this of crop biomass in the mid-US. Excuse me. Once we have crop biomass, we need an estimate of how much residue we can remove from the land, corn stover or wheat straw. And in this case, that's based on the work that Bob Perlack has been doing, integrating actually the work of Richard Nelson, who will be giving a talk on Wednesday. It's based on the universal soil loss equation and therefore considers slope, soil type, ground cover, and other factors. As I understand, that's being updated right now, and it will be based on the revised universal soil loss equation to get some idea or an estimate of how much can be removed from the field while still maintaining a level of soil erosion under this tolerable soil loss factor. If we do that, we end up now moving from the biomass estimate that I showed on the previous slide to an estimate over here of available crop residues. What you're really seeing is throughout this pasture land, there's corn and soybean dotted throughout this landscape. And now we have an estimate of the corn stover and wheat straw that could be removed from those areas. Again, this is in this blow-up or zoomed portion of Missouri. So that's our a way to improve our estimates of current feedstocks. And the question is, what's the availability of future feedstocks? And what we had done is compile, for instance, we have no estimate of regional switchgrass yields. So that's one of the components we needed to estimate future feedstocks. Compile some data, which is now you can obtain this data at this website, bioenergy.ornl.gov, and then modeled this data which is also included in this report but has been improved recently, and we end up with a map. I'm sorry that it's all green. If it were many different colors, it'd be easier to see. There's different shades of green here representing the different yields of switchgrass across the United States. And that's what we're now moving into, the economic modeling portion. So this is an estimate of how we have used existing field data to model switchgrass yields across the U.S. And my understanding, again, we'll have other talks on this later today, are that there are a number of other field experiments going on right now. And those field experiments will help revise these estimates of bioenergy yields across the U.S. If we're going to take yields and project where we can grow them, we have to have some way to model the land use change. Again, we go back to the cropland data layer. We try to estimate where the current fields are so we can move those fields in and out of production in the future across the U.S. There's no way we can estimate exactly which field changes, but it gives us some realization of what might be happening over the landscape. We use the PolySys model, which Chad Hellwinkle will describe the last talk of the session, how that works to estimate which crops will be replacing which crops. For instance, switchgrass replacing wheat or pasture based on prices and current legislation. What we end up with as a final result, again using the state of Missouri as an example, is this current land cover of 2007 showing corn and soybean. The light green is pasture, the dark green is forest. And then a movement of this dark brown rust colored, which represents switchgrass moving into the fields. The peach colored is hay that's also moving in, likely to make up for the changes in hay elsewhere and trying to maintain adequate feed for livestock. So this is the representation of land cover that we see over in around 2030, commensurate with the Energy Act in Missouri, and we have that across the U.S. to help us estimate future feedstock availability. This is only one way. It's meant to just show a thread through the field work and how we're using that to estimate current and available feedstock. There'll be two more presentations after this that will also show some type of integrative methods. Last slide on future applications and future research. The goal here is really to improve these yields, estimates of yields, residue removal, and available land area so that we can get improved estimates of greenhouse gas emissions, watershed modeling, biorefinery siting, and clearly an estimate of total available feedstocks. In doing this, the areas of research that I've identified that could use more work are clearly these three things: yield and biomass estimates, including field measurements, crop physiological models, remote sensing, sustainably removable biomass estimates. Again, sustainably removable, sometimes that's described in biophysical terms, sometimes in economic terms, but these are some of the things that might be considered in estimating sustainable removable biomass: soil erosion, soil carbon, nutrient runoff, greenhouse gas emissions, and available land area, marginal lands versus prime land. So with that, we have several minutes for questions, which I hope there are some before we move to the next talk.
Will you be putting water availability into this model?
Water availability has come up several times. That's definitely something we need to be considering. It is not in the model right now. Thank you for pointing that out. One thing that I am considering is that when we get these final estimates of land use change and total available feedstock, it's random right now. If the model tells us that we are going to replace a certain percentage of pasture with switchgrass, the only thing we're doing right now is randomly distributing that. If we try to improve that, water availability should be one of the things that we consider. I'm not quite sure what else we should consider right now. Clearly, road networks, potentially biorefineries. That including the water availability and potentially slope are the obvious ones.
When you talk about refineries, are you looking at a number of different options for converting biomass? Are you looking at everything from mobile pyrolysis units to large-scale ethanol plants using lignocellulose? In other words, as you model, and it's clear that as some of these bioenergy crops come in, those that come in and the acreages on which they occupy is going to be very much contingent on how they're being processed and converted, and it's going to be very much dependent then on the technology that's being used to convert it somehow to a fuel. So as you see growth of these crops in an area, you talk about randomness in assigning crops. That to me takes away your randomness. So the hypotheses that could be tested would represent several different models for energy conversion. Is that part of this process?
Yes. I envision several different scenarios based on different technology. There are other groups right now working on the conversion processes and how that might happen. We're going to have to work with those groups before we run any type of scenarios, before we try to essentially base the distribution on something that's not random. I don't have all the answers to that. We'll have to work with other groups on that. And it will largely depend on the transportation, where the conversion happens, whether there's pre-conversion processes, as you pointed out.
Two questions. Are you still just using the soil loss, or are you looking at how much needs to be left on the land for sustainability? And the other question is, are you factoring in potential improvements in yield due to improved technology in your modeling exercise?
There's improvements in yield. Where's Chad? Is that correct?
Yeah, we have assumptions on USDA trends on
So there's improvements in yield. You'll hear about that more later. I think the first part of the question was, are you actually estimating soil erosion associated with different scenarios, or is it just based on how much you have to leave right now to meet a certain threshold?
The report was basically based upon just how much had to be left on the land to maintain, reduce, keep erosion. But it turns out that the REAP data shows you actually have to leave more on the land than that. Or what are you using?
If you're talking about the original billion ton report, that has been revised several times over at this point. My understanding in talking to Bob and others is that they are removing much less off the land right now, to something that is around 35% nationwide. However, it's county by county at this point, and 35 is simply an average. It's still based on the universal soil loss equation. They're upgrading it so that it's going to be based on the revised universal soil loss equation. In that type of methodology, they're still using this threshold. How much do you have to keep on to maintain that tolerable soil loss? We have other efforts going forward outside of that billion ton study and program to look at actual soil loss occurring regardless, based on different scenarios.
Is the revision available? The revision of the billion ton report?
I meant to ask that question so that I would have it ready for you today, and I forgot. So please email me or contact me, and if it is available publicly, I can get it to you. I know that the version they're working on right now is not complete yet, but I do not know whether there's been a version before that. Peter, do you know anything about that?
To my knowledge, the answer is no. I'm not an expert. I'm not involved directly.
Okay. Maybe one more question. Maybe two. Go ahead. Yes. That's clearly an area of work. There are a number of other talks and symposiums at this conference on carbon sequestration. We probably won't look at that a lot here. I think Chad's going to consider it a little bit in his analysis. My feeling on that is that there's simply a lot of work that needs to be done. It's for the simple reason that we have decades and decades of field experiments that have looked at soil carbon under traditional crops. We don't have that much data with bioenergy crops. We need the data, and we need to analyze it. We need to work with the modeling community to get those relationships into the model and try to make those estimates. Another question, go ahead.
I couldn't tell from your slides in that case study county there in Missouri, yep. What was the range of biomass yields for switchgrass that you were, I mean, you projected it, but I couldn't.
Yeah, I couldn't either, because of that green slide, which was pre-made, that I put in here. I can't tell you off the top of my head what the switchgrass yields were for that exact title, but I appreciate the comment. Something I should have in there.
Trace, I just wanted to mention, since the discussion was about erosion from biomass removal, there's a new version of Russell II on a poster number 405 having to do with modeling things like switchgrass and for biomass harvesting. If you're interested, I'll be over there at 4 o'clock.
Did everybody hear that? Poster 402.
Five.
405 for the Russell 2 equation. 1405, yes.
1405.
There are...
It makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference.
And so I would ask you to pass that on to you, whoever's revising that report.
They should consider this. I was in a meeting 2 years ago when they were using the universal soil loss equation and suggested the move to Russell because of the dramatic changes in results. What you're saying is there's even more.
Russell 2 never did very well for perennial grasses.
Yes.
But now we've got it pretty well, and I welcome any feedback.
Okay, thank you. Cesar, now we're 1 minute over. I'm sorry. I'd like to introduce Cesar Esralde. Wow, this is a very nice...